entertainment.ie.
I love the way you say film.
Hello and welcome back to the Film Show. Another lovely week to be with two people I know. How are you guys? Brian Lloyd, Dee Malumbi.
We're
I'm your
good.
Host, Owen Ronayne. Most importantly.
Nice.
Nice. Slick.
We have got a series of movie reviews, believe it or not, to get through this week.
Really?
Pretty good week for releases. We've got Ad Astra, The Kitchen, Rambo Last Blood, and we're going to talk again a little bit about Extraordinary as well, because we're supporting homegrown Irish content. Up first, we've got news.
Movie news.
So first up this week, we've got a bit of Princess Bride news. Brian, do you want to take us away? He's rolling his eyes.
I pre-rolled my eyes when you mentioned this. I was like, because I'm actually like, right. There is no way The Princess Bride should be remade. I'm just going to just
now what?
Start,
this was suggested
out.
By the this head was, of Sony Pictures.
Yeah, the head of Sony Pictures basically was talking about, the quote was that I know some famous people who I won't mention really want to take a crack at a remake of The Princess Bride. Now, I'm doing this a long time. Well, no, I'm not doing this like, that makes it seem like decades.
You're an old man.
I'm an old man. I'm as old as Jesus. And I can tell you honestly, I have never seen that sharp a reaction and that unified a reaction to something where they're like, absolutely not. Are you fucking kidding me? Never. Don't even joke about it. You should not remake The Princess Bride.
Do you think that was like a cynical, do you think he was putting the feelers out by saying something
like that?
I
would say he was, yeah. It wouldn't surprise me in the slightest if they were kind of like tickling the balls of the audience and being like, oh, what would you think about a Princess Bride? Everyone's like, no!
Leave my balls alone.
They do not want to be tickled. And to be fair, like, I mean, like, as films go, I think The Princess Bride is pretty perfect.
It's so perfect in and of itself. And I mean, like, you look at it now and it's aged so well.
Yes.
As in, like, it's genuinely so timeless and perfect. Yeah. And everyone who you introduce it to, like, whether they're old or young, seriously, this is a movie that actually unites every generation. It brings together families. It's such a lovely film. Leave it alone. Yeah. I'm also really appreciative of the fact that you've got the likes of Cary Elwes. Am I saying his surname right?
Yeah.
And Jamie Lee Curtis, like, getting on Twitter and being like, don't do this. This movie is perfect. Leave it alone. So I'm really appreciative of that as well.
Cary Elwes seems like such a good egg.
He does, doesn't he?
I read, actually, he wrote a book about the making of The Princess Bride, which I read. It's a very nice book.
It's called As You Wish, isn't
it?
Yes. Yeah! Such a good movie. I saw it in The Lighthouse a couple of months ago. They had it as part of some season they were doing.
The Wonder Years thing.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Is that your first time seeing it?
No, but maybe I only saw it for the first time like 2 or 3 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, I missed it. Maybe because I'm not an old ass.
Well, like, that is fair.
No. I think it was, again, my partner was obsessed with it. And maybe it was bigger in the US as a kind of Goonies, like, young person film or whatever.
Definitely.
Same with like A Christmas Story or one of those.
Yeah, A Christmas Story didn't take off here. Yeah, Christmas Story didn't take off here, but like Goonies definitely took off here. And Princess Bride did as well, I feel.
Yeah,
my
fiance actually only saw The Goonies for the first time in the last few months, and he thought it was great. He was like, "Why haven't I seen this film earlier?" And I was like, "I know,
it's
so good." Ooh, fun fact! Also, Kobe Smulders' favorite movie is as in Robin from How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah.
Her favorite movie is The Princess Bride.
Yeah, I can see
that. I'm sure it's loads of people's.
Yeah, that's
movie.
The thing.
It
you
is.
Know?
It is. Yeah, and the book is great as well. Like the book, I have it at home. Like I bought it a few months ago, and I read it like cover to cover, like in a week. Like it's so funny, and like I've never seen. I would say it's probably one of the sharpest kind of adaptations. As well as in, like, it captured exactly the right mood
and
feel and got it.
Was he involved with the screenplay then?
Yeah, William Goldman. William Goldman,
yeah.
And like, William Goldman was one of my favorite writers, full stop, like, so he just did it so well. But, like, the thing, somebody made this point and they were like, you know, anyone who has seen The Princess Bride, I feel has the same reaction that everyone had, which is, it's perfect.
Yeah.
It's like Gone with the Wind, or it's like fucking
it is,
Godfather.
Actually,
you just don't touch it. Like, why would you even bother? So anyone who is suggesting that it should be remade, it's done for the completely wrong reasons, i.e.
to make money.
To make money, like. And that's just the fucking worst fucking thing to
Something
do
similar
it.
Happened with Back to the Future, didn't it? Where
Robert Zemeckis.
He just He said he'll never release it?
He literally said, over my dead body, is anyone ever going to remake Back to the Future? And he was like, and he said, literally, I will have to die. I own the rights to the film, and literally, I'm stipulating that it'll never be remade.
He puts a nice little Back to the Future reference in his latest movie, by the way, Welcome to Marwen. It's so cute. It's just that little wink to the audience. Oh. It's lovely.
Was it the DeLorean, was it? Or was it?
It was the DeLorean. Of course it was.
I I feel like with a certain amount, like when he came out with that statement, it was right at the peak, not that it slowed down in any way, of the adaptation of every single speck of dust on the planet. And it kind of feels like, I don't know, like politics or something where you feel like you have no influence over it. And it's like, well, these things are going to get remade anyway. So then for him to come out and defend something where it's like, no, it's fine. Same way, was it like there'll never be a Calvin and Hobbes adaptation?
Yeah.
Or something, because he's like, no, it's a comic strip. It's
why would you want
it's
it?
It's perfect.
Why would you want it? Yeah, like Alan Moore was like that as well about Watchmen. He was like, I don't see why this should be made into a film at
all. And he'd been burned before with From Hell.
And now it's a movie and a TV series. No, it
is. And I tell you, I'm really not, and this is an ad, this isn't a whatever, but I am really looking forward to the Watchmen TV series. I really want to see it. Like,
I actually think that the movie is quite decent when you go back and rewatch it.
Yeah.
It's good.
It has its moments, like. Like
this is the thing, because I did enjoy it in the cinema, having got the comic book ahead of the release, which I'm grateful for as well, kind of thing. But there was something about the shot-for-shotness of it that I did appreciate.
Yeah, there you go.
Where he just did it, like.
He literally,
that opening sequence with, what is it, the times comedian. Are changing.
Oh, that's so Bob Dylan, well done.
They have like a montage of altered time or whatever.
Yeah, and like, to be fair, like, I appreciate how faithful, like I think that he literally used the comic book as the storyboard.
Yeah,
but at the same time, I was kind of like, you know, part of me was kind of like, you know, they could have mixed it up a little.
Was it a bit saggy or something?
A bit saggy in the middle. A bit saggy. And again, I think that's the argument I would make is that it can, if a comic book sags or if a comic book decides to like pause and like just ruminate on something, they can do that because it's a comic book. But if it's a film, you kind of don't really have, you can have that luxury every now and then, like, you know, that kind of way, I think. But
it's like a PowerPoint
with
a few too many bullet points.
Exactly. That's it.
That's what films are.
Yeah. That's a weird analogy, but I know what you're getting at. I know what you mean. I know what you're getting at. I get it. Like, fuck anyone who says that they should remake Princess Bride.
If you had to pick one movie that you can lock away in a vault where it can't be touched, I'm trying to think of ones that might be gotten at. Like The Godfather probably won't.
I would be worried that they'd go for The Goonies, and I also think that that's kind of perfect in and of itself. I'd be worried that they'd try to do it again with the Stranger Things kids or something like that, bank on that.
I'm actually,
do you know what? Full circle, credit to Cary Elwes in Stranger Things season 3 as the mayor. I only saw it last week and he's brilliant.
Ooh, right. I still have to see season 3. It's so bad. You know what? I think I've given up on Van sitting down and watching seasons 1 and 2. I'm waiting for 3 now.
He's going to hate the third season because the Russians are in it.
It's
so anti-Russian. Holy shit, he's going to hate it.
Well, we did watch Rambo 3 the other night and that has Russian baddies. I think that he's well used to them at this point.
How does he actually, I would actually love to talk to him about that.
I've never asked about
How does he find it?
A bit annoying.
Yeah, true.
You would.
True. Did he like Chernobyl? Is that a bit more...
Haven't seen it.
You haven't seen Chernobyl?
Guys, this is a film show.
Sorry.
We keep on diving into totally TV series and stuff.
Movie reviews.
That was so slick. So
Seamless.
Wasn't at all.
And that's how you get into movie reviews. You just say it and then things move on. And now we're here in the future, which is currently the present. But when you listen back to it, it will have been the past.
And Ad Astra is set in the future, but the near future.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Tell me more.
Let me tell you all about it.
Stars Brad Pitt as an astronaut with daddy issues. In summary.
I mean, I feel like you're minimizing a little bit, Deirdre, if you don't mind my saying.
because apparently it's vast and complex and deeply contemplative.
I think we're going to get two takes on a film.
I think we are.
Because, Brian, I believe you enjoyed the film.
I will say, okay, right. No. Here's what I'll say. I wrote the review for this. I gave it 5 stars.
Wow.
I absolutely loved it. This is the second film this year I've given 5 stars to. The first one was a great documentary called An Engineer Imagines. I think it's up on the RTE player. It is a beautiful,
wow,
fantastic documentary. I fucking highly recommend it. Definitely
give me
seek
a 10
it out.
Second synopsis of that.
An Engineer Imagines. It's about this engineer basically who, I'm sorry, a building engineer who designed like some of the most well-known buildings. Like that one, I forget the name of it now. It's in Paris. It's the one with all the pipes on the outside. My brain is blanking now because I saw the Goldfinch earlier today and it was terrible and it actually blew a circle in my head. But An Engineer Imagines. It's basically all about how he came up with the concept for these buildings and it was so well done. It reminded me a lot of The Farthest, which I absolutely love.
Okay,
have you seen that, by the way?
Yeah.
I loved The Farthest. It reminded me of that anyway. I was like, it's fucking great. Ad Astra. Right. Now, I loved it. I went to see it twice, in fact. I went to see it the day after I saw it because I fucking loved it that much, right? No, I'll tell you why, right? Because I was like, I came out and I was like, that's a 5-star film. Holy shit, that's a 5-star film. I've got to fucking just... Rah. Wrote the review, filed it, and then I was still thinking about the film. And usually I kind of find if at the end of the day after I've written the review and I'm still thinking about it, I'm still playing scenes over my head, that's pretty good.
It left a deep
imprint. I'm like, I feel confident about this. But then woke up the next day and I was like, do you know what? I will want to see it again just to, if I can sit through a second time right after it and I'm still feeling...
We is glowing. The second
completely.
Time. No way. Brilliant.
Completely. I walked out of it the second time. I was like, I am fucking, have never been more certain of a 5-star review
no
than I have
way.
Been of this. That's how much I loved it. Now,
explain the themes to me. Like, how does it compare to Interstellar?
Well, this is it, right? The thing I always find about like space movies like these is that because it's dealing with such huge concepts and ideas, they've basically got to shrink it down into the smallest possible concept. In other words, you know, Interstellar was basically about a father trying to make the world safe for his children kind of thing. And in order to do that, he has to go out into space in order to do that.
Fair, yeah.
With something like, say, this great film called Outland that was done in the 80s. It's basically about, like, if we go into space, is capitalism going to follow us and be just as awful in space
brilliant.
As it is here? And that's what
can
I
you give a Space Odyssey in it's
Space Odyssey?
One theme.
Space Odyssey is more philosophical. 2001 is basically about like how does humanity change, and humanity has to change by some outside extremity force to come in and just kick it on, like which is what the shape is.
Yeah.
With Ad Astra, the central theme is that, you know, father-son relationships are kind of based on hero worship, and that you completely idolize your father, and that, you know, if you follow your father into the same field of work,
yeah,
you are defined by what he's done. So therefore, it's a case of how do I become my own person? And also as well, the fact that, like, you know, in male relationships, the idea is that the elder, the father or figure or whatever, it's for them to be strong and it's for them to kind of like shut down their emotions and just be completely manly and masculine about it. And our generation is kind of learning to understand that it is okay to have feelings and it is okay to show emotions and have emotional reactions.
Yeah.
And that's really what Ad Astra is about. The idea of, you know, understanding that
a man finding himself,
well, like not a man finding himself as such, I think
I can't wait for your hot take.
I don't think it's necessarily about that, but it's basically kind of understanding that even if you idolize your father can still be a prick.
Wow, yeah. And you know, this is Tommy Lee Jones we're talking about.
And Tommy Lee Jones plays his father in
it. I can't wait to see him in it.
Yeah, and he's not in it all that much. Like, that's it. Let's kind of think like he's a distant father and he's always kind of
Literally, he couldn't further away.
Literally,
he's this mythical.
He's this mythical.
Now, what is the mission?
The mission is essentially Tommy Lee Jones was this like the first man on Jupiter. He was the first man on Mars.
Amazing.
He's this like hero astronaut.
So it's like literal hero worship. And yeah, you know,
Daddy still hasn't come home.
This was it. He was sent off on this project to basically try to discover intelligent life far beyond at the very edge of the solar system. And he was lost and thought dead. Brad Pitt's character then becomes an astronaut, follows his father into that trade, if you like. And then when this thing called the Surge happens, which knocks out all electrical things in Earth, they trace it back to Tommy Lee Jones. So then he's basically sent out to try communicate with him and reach his father.
Wow. And are they suspicious of him as a kind of terrorist? Or
initially, they're kind of thinking, something has happened. We know your father's involved. We need you to go out and try talk to him.
Yeah.
And then as the story unfolds, it kind of becomes like Apocalypse Now. And it's sort of like, you know, maybe everything that he thought about his father wasn't actually true. And that, you know, and I don't feel like that's spoilers. That's kind of intimate.
Yeah, that's the story.
That's the limit of it. That's a very good, well-told synopsis.
Now, like I said, I watched this and it really got me. It really, really got me. It reminded me of Blade Runner. The whole emotional content of it really spoke to me. And that's why I felt like it was 5 stars. Now, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say, oh, it was very much too arch. And it just the reason why you loved it was because it reminded me so much of Blade Runner. You're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. But I still feel like this was a fucking great film.
I thought it was a good film.
Oh!
I thought it was a very good film. I did not think it was a 5-star film. I would be leaning more towards 4 stars. You know, Brad Pitt gives a great performance in it. There are some really, really nice visual stuff going on. Like, it is gorgeous to look at. It's beautifully shot. Reminded me, obviously, a lot of other, you know, space set movies. But it did manage to have its own aesthetic as well, which I really appreciated. I like the whole idea that they have to give the astronauts have to keep giving these like psychological reports where they're talking about how they're feeling, how they're reacting to events. I thought that was an interesting little bit to have in the narrative in terms of like they are looking after the astronauts because they're, you know, checking in on them. But they're not really, because the astronauts are still essentially taking care of themselves and their own emotions.
And are they self-assessing their mental health?
Yeah, exactly. So, and then they have to
give... That's done in the military in American real life anyway, which is like a silly concept.
Yeah, but it makes sense for, you know, astronauts because they're going to space. There's all this isolation. And, you know, all the like physical toll that takes and everything. But at the end of the day, I also just thought it was just another movie about a guy with issues with his father. You know what I mean? That's what I kind of got about it. I don't know. I'm getting a bit sick of those kind of films, if I'm honest. You know, obviously, you know, the males in the audience can't get enough of them, but...
That's a really interesting take. No,
that
is.
That's,
as someone who hasn't seen it, yeah.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that. It is definitely, like, I can't...
It's a really masculine film as well, like...
Masculine in a sense.
Like, Liv Tyler, like... gets about one line in it and it's via a Skype call and then she kind of appears and disappears, right? Because the whole idea is she's his ex-wife. It's mostly about Brad Pitt and his relationship with his father, which is fine, but it's just gets a bit boring.
I take, like, Dee's point is correct. I absolutely take your point. It is definitely like a very masculine driven film. That's absolutely correct.
Male centric.
Mm. Sorry, there you go. That's correct. And I
definitely got the Blade Runner vibes, both in terms of the themes and even visually. I thought that there were bits that I was like, when he's on the bit in the moon, and then I also liked the car chase, because one always wonders what a car chase would be like in space, and it perfectly visualizes it, kind of, because it's weird, because they're having a chase, but they're kind of like slowly moving as well because they're in space. Like, it's kind of this surreal, like almost, it could be almost goofy looking, but it absolutely works.
Really want to see it. I'm hungry.
It moves at a good pace as well, I'd say. Yeah. Like, it never kind of drags, but it felt like it was kind of just long enough.
Yeah.
was good. It was a good movie, but it wasn't.
You wouldn't rank
a great
it amongst
movie.
Your favorite sci-fi?
No. No. I wouldn't.
And that's mostly because of the themes.
It's mostly because of the I like some of the kind of side themes that were going on, but the main story just being a son like trying to connect from his father but also trying to be his own person. It's just so overdone.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's a common theme. You're right. It is a common theme. But I think the reason it's a common theme because a lot of men have that issue. Like, and not to get too personal, but like, I have that issue. Like, that's what I'm saying. When I saw this, like,
of course.
I really connected with it. Like, it really got to me. Like, and I really, I don't want to give it away, but there's a scene in it at the end. And. it's like one. I think it's one of Brad Pitt's best performances.
I think it is it too. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if he got an Oscar nod out of this. Definitely. Maybe even a win. Yeah. Although, from what I've heard of Joaquin Phoenix, but certainly he'd deserve an Oscar nomination for this.
Definitely, yeah. But does it? It's
that's great for him.
Yeah, no, yeah, 100%. Like, and I think you know, but this scene at the end, you'll know it when you see it. Like, it was so. Jesus, it was so well done. You are right, these stories are common. They have been done a lot.
Kylo Ren.
I mean, like, it's a common theme in sci-fi. It's a common theme, you know, like, but I think the reason is because it's a common thing. Like, it does happen, like, you know.
It's interesting though that you say that you did kind of have a personal reaction, because I was kind of saying how I'm getting that with movies more now as well. Maybe it's because we're getting older.
Yeah.
But I do really like the ones that I feel like I can kind of make a personal connection.
Yeah, exactly,
you know
what
I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
And I know you say that's not why, but I do think that's a big reason why you like the Mustang too, was because the horses. Just saying, but I need to see the film to know for sure. Had to mention the horse. Had to
Can
mention
we
it.
Go back to
Oh my god, let's not.
No,
let's
wait,
not.
Wait, don't tell me. Let's City Gold.
Oh, but okay, right. I'm stopping this right now. A final point I'll make about Ad Astra. The
Any horses in it?
No.
Horses in space. It's like Notting Hill.
Horse and Hound, yeah.
That'll be the City Gold sequel.
Anyways, the soundtrack is fantastic. It's by Max Richter. Cinematography is by Hoyt van Hoytema. He did Dunkirk. Looks gorgeous. Soundtrack is great. I really, really loved it. For me, one of the best films I've seen this year.
You said IMAX as well.
Oh, yeah. Jesus. Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Do see it in IMAX.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
How many screens are there outside Dublin?
For IMAX?
Yeah.
There's one out in Blanche. There's an IMAX out in Blanche.
Is there one in Cork?
I would think so. I don't know, actually.
I think the gate might have one. I don't know. But I don't recommend it if it's too Dublin.
Yeah, but like, like, there's that Odeon iSense. Like, I think that's pretty big as well.
That's a big screen too. Big screen.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Great. Right. Well, there you go. 5-star or 4-star? Are you leaning to 3-star? Are you
no,
happy with 4?
No, I'd give it 4. It is a good movie. It's just like I said.
Yeah, yeah.
I personally didn't connect to it.
In comparison.
Because I'm not a male.
Yeah, fair. No merits discussion. I can't wait to see it.
Definitely. No, you are right. I do think, and I think this is such a bullshit reason, but I do think women will react to it differently. Like.
And speaking of women, our next film is female-led, The Kitchen. You know what I'm a bit confused by?
Okay.
May I pick a bone with you, Brian?
Please.
Because when you initially came out of The Kitchen, you said that you thought it actually worked better than Widows, because this film is being compared a lot to Widows, obviously, because they have the similar storylines and that they're...
Is it more tongue-in-cheek or something? Sorry, give us the synopsis.
Yeah, so synopsis-wise, you've got three women. They're living in, you know, Hell's Kitchen, New York, and I think that they kind of take over from their husbands into all these gang activities and take control and get into their own kind of shit,
which
is similar enough to what happens in Widows. Now, what you were saying to me was that you thought tonally The Kitchen worked better because Widows was kind of a slightly camp story, but it was taken kind of really sincerely in tone because it was your man, whatchamacallit,
Steve McQueen.
Steve McQueen. But then you gave The Kitchen a 1.5-star review. So I was confused because I thought that you liked it and I thought you meant it as a compliment that tonally it worked. So what happened?
Right.
You thought about it and you decided you hate women.
That's what it's all building up to. We finally heard it here first. Let me write that into my notes. Brian hates women.
Right. Okay. So, here is the skinny on The Kitchen. I started writing the review. That's basically what happened. I started writing the review. And then I was like, oh, I didn't like that. I was like, oh, shit, I didn't like that either. And I was writing, I was like, oh, God, I hate... And then it actually dawned on me, no, wait a minute, I hated this film. And that's literally it. Like, when I actually... I know that sounds like a cop-out, and I know you're giving
that's
me a
really
funny look.
That's really weird. Like, I've never had that reaction. Like, I'll be writing a review, and I might be like, oh, I don't think it was as good as I remember, or I don't think it was as terrible as I remember, but I've never kind of done a...
A dull 180.
You know?
No, you see, this is it. When I walked out of it, I was kind of like, well, that's, you know, I was kind of a bit wishy-washy on it. And I thought about, see, this is it. I started thinking about Widows, essentially. And then, because I remember I said that to you. I was like, oh, you know, Widows was done very, very seriously and earnestly. And I think maybe it kind of could have benefited from a bit more campiness, which is what The Kitchen had. But when I started kind of pulling the two of them apart and comparing and contrasting with them, I was like, no, Widows was actually a way better film than I gave it credit for. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I went back and watched a lot of clips of Widows just to kind of give myself a bit of, just to refresh it in my brain.
Yeah, but you can't really compare it directly.
You totally can, because it's the same idea.
That's like comparing Ad Astra to... Blade Runner.
Yeah, and you could. No, you're right.
They're different films. I know that we were talking about how Ad Astra can be like Blade Runner, but they're still different films. You can't like review a movie by comparing it directly to
another but I mean, okay,
that's all I do.
No.
Unless they're based on, say, the same source novel.
Well, to be fair, I would argue that Widows and The Kitchen are pretty much the same story. Like, you've basically got, you know, wives of criminals, criminal husbands are sent away. Wives have to fend for themselves, decide to take on their husband's criminal activities, make a real go of it. And then it's kind of like, oh, the men in their lives are now returning to take it off them because men can't allow that to happen because men want to control the order of things.
So tell us some of the things you didn't like about it.
Right. I felt that...
Sorry, I kind of feel like I'm taking your job here, Owen, but
no,
I have a bone to
I
pick.
Love watching this gender war play out.
I'll tell you, like, what I disliked about The Kitchen was that essentially the performances were so fucking jagged compared to one another that it didn't glue. Like, Tiffany Haddish was basically playing it like she was in some fucking remake of, I don't know, Foxy Brown or Cleopatra Jones. She was playing it exactly like she was in...
I would watch that.
And that's it. The whole time I was watching this, was like, if they were going to remake Foxy Brown tomorrow or Coffee, fucking Tiffany Haddish.
Right, yeah.
Lock her the fuck in because she would be fantastic at it. I could totally see her in a Pam Grier type role.
Yeah. All the movie producers listening to this podcast, make it happen. Leave The Princess Bride alone and make this happen.
Yeah, I know, but that's it. I would watch that. That's it. Coffee, if they were
that's
to remake
right
Coffee.
That's the right amount of reimagination or whatever. Yeah.
100%. I'd be like, get Tiffany Haddish to do it. Fucking 100%. I'll be there day one. I'll watch that.
But then what? Tonally, this is a bit all over the place.
Well, that's it. Tonally, it's all over the kip, right? Because you have Tiffany Haddish, I think, coming at it the correct way, which is very broad, very kind of like, listen, this is a bit of crack and this is a bit of whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Elizabeth Moss, I feel like she clearly was doing this in between The Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
And she came into this so seriously and so...
She plays a very sincere... Decision.
Yeah, and very like, oh, internalized and
in
crying.
Fairness, if it was around the time of The Handmaid's Tale, she probably was still in serious mode.
Correct.
You know what I mean?
Correct.
Because that is a heavy...
And it's Melissa McCarthy as well.
Yeah. And we'll get to Melissa McCarthy, but just to make the point about Elizabeth Moss, her character is a victim of abuse. So maybe she felt, well, that's kind of similar to The Handmaid's Tale. I can bring some of the same kind of thinking to this, and it doesn't really work.
Would you agree with that, Dean?
I haven't seen it.
Oh, sorry. Oh.
That's why I have the bone to pick.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then Melissa McCarthy, I think, didn't really know what to do because she was kind of straddling the middle. On the one hand, you got Elizabeth Moss giving this serious fucking gravitas performance. And then on the other hand, you got Tiffany Haddish trying to jazz it all up a little bit. And
make plus,
it
she's off the back of her. What was the Ghost Rider one with Richard E. Grant?
Can you ever forgive me?
Yeah. So between the three of them, it's just totally all over the kip. And then you have Andrea Borloff, who wrote and directed this. And I kind of get the sense that, like, she's trying to say, well, you know, women empowerment and crime. Yay, let's Gloria Steinem the shit out of this. And, like, compare that to Widows.
Mm.
And again, it's the same concept. It's the same concept. But, like, Widows, I felt, treated it more seriously.
Genuine empowerment or something?
Correct, yeah. I felt like in Widows, it felt more genuine. And okay, I mean that in enough. The sense of, like, these women were doing this just to survive. Mm. They were like, our husbands are gone. There's nobody coming to help us.
Well, they're widows, so.
They're widows, literally, yeah. They're literally, well, yeah. Well, like, names in the title. But in the sense of widows, it was done with more kind of authenticity. And they're fucking no one's coming to help us. We've got to do this ourselves. And like, not even that as well, but played on the fact that, like, that great line from Viola Davis, which is like, no one thinks we've got the balls to do this. We've got to do this ourselves.
Mm.
That I felt like, yes, that I agree with more. In this, it was kind of like, oh, well, let's fucking do it for the crack. And there's even like, a disco montage in it. Like, do you know that kind of way?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You're just like, oh, come on, the fuck. Like, and like, it's a great cast. Mm. It's such a waste of an opportunity.
Yeah.
That's it. When I actually started writing, it was like, I didn't like any. I was like, okay, yeah, cool, 70s. I love the 70s. I love New York crime thrillers. I'm totally on with this. And then I started.
Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah, Hell's Kitchen, 1978. I was like, oh, fuck, yeah, totally. That's my bag.
Mm.
And then I started writing and I was like, oh, no. Yeah, oh, no.
Fair enough.
So that's it. So, like, when I was talking to you at the time, I literally had just come from the screen and I was like,
yeah, I mean, you weren't ecstatic either. I was just surprised that you were saying...
I took such a turn with it.
Yeah, but I mean, now that you say all that, like, I can't really argue against it. I mean, I haven't seen the film, so I can't argue against it anyway.
Deadly, no.
But I can see where you're coming from. That's fair.
Genuinely, though, I would love you to watch it and come back to me if you want, whatever. But just because I would love to hear what you thought of it as well, obviously.
Yeah. Well, like, if we're sticking to female empowerment flicks, should they stick to Hustlers? It's been getting a lot of... Everybody's been really...
I don't know that, because everyone I'm talking to about that are saying, oh, it's amazing. I don't know what Dee was talking about.
I do like it. I gave it 2.5 stars because I suppose my main gripe with it was that I found the characters a bit cold or something.
Yeah, like, that's fair.
And a bit two-dimensional.
Yeah, that's
fair. I was a bit frustrated by that. But generally, I enjoyed it. I mean, 2.5 is like an okay.
That's decent.
Like, it's okay. It's down the road okay. I just didn't love it. It was good fun.
J-Lo's been getting a lot of love, I suppose, was the main thing.
Yeah, but I know people are saying it's like an Oscar-worthy performance, but I don't know. But then again, I haven't really seen any other like best supporting actress.
Yeah.
Great
stand
performances
out yet this year or whatever.
So,
yeah.
I mean, she might get it. And if she does get it, you know, it's because she's kind of done her bit with regards to the movie industry. All of those silly rom-coms.
It's like a Lifetime Achievement Award.
Yeah. That
could be that.
That happened with A Star Is Born anyway.
Yeah, but I think what's going to happen there is that Little Women is going to come out and that's going to fucking blow everyone out the water.
Wow, that could do. That could do that. Yep.
That's what I think.
Who would be considered best supporting there if it's
Laura Dern or Meryl Streep, probably?
Oh, God.
That's insane. That's it. You see the two of them, you're like,
Well, you've got like Florence Pugh and Emma Watson in there as well.
Whose job is it to pick out the actress in an ensemble like that?
I think.
Or actors, you know what I mean?
Usually you can have two nominations in there.
Oh,
if
can
it's
you?
That good. Mm. Yeah.
No way.
Like, sure, remember with Django Unchained, both Leo and Christoph Waltz were nominated for Best Supporting Actor.
And Waltz won.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And like, that's it. Like, I mean, usually what happens there is that like studios actually have strategists for their Oscar
campaigns.
Oh yeah,
who'll go quiet on certain movies and
And they're literally like, you know, you are going to, if we push this performance, we can win, and like, we can do that. Like, so I'd say they'll probably, with Little Women, I'd say they'll probably push either Laura Dern or Meryl Streep for it. Like,
we'll have to see.
We'll have to see. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Brian hates women. Great.
I'm glad that's out there.
Well, our next you'll be happy to hear our next movie is about a big burly man, Rambo.
First Blood.
Last Blood.
Oh, sorry, Last Blood.
Right. Now, I was
Brian's starting to talk and he hasn't seen the movie.
No. Because
Such a gender war. I don't know how. Should we have reordered these?
Hang on a sec, because you started off with a question to me about the kitchen. So hopefully you will give me the courtesy of asking you.
Too masculine for you, Dee.
Don't like men, huh? Guess you're a misandrist, Dee.
I love the Rambo movies.
I'm just going to write Dee and then I'm going to write men and we'll fill in the gap.
Yeah, question mark. Put a question mark in there. Yeah. Dee, men? Question mark. I heard an early screening. I saw an early screening reaction for Rambo Last Blood.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently there was a scene in where Rambo plunges his hand into a man's chest and rips out his beating heart. Tell me that was in the film, because if that was in the film, I am fucking going to go see it tomorrow.
I'm telling you now, I don't think I can, because I think that would be a spoiler. But I can tell you, he does not just rip out one body part, but two body parts at different points in the film. And
amazing.
Let's
different
not forget
guys.
That different guys, thank God.
I thought it was like a
heart and crotch. I'm going to rip your balls out and your heart out.
But in Rambo 3, you may forget this, but he ripped out someone's throat in Rambo 3.
Like MacGruber.
A la Patrick Swayze in whatchamacallit, Roadhouse.
Roadhouse, yeah.
Sick.
Rambo, which one? Okay, Rambo 3 was the one with the Mujahideen, wasn't
it? It's set in Afghanistan. Afghanistan, and it has not aged well at all. And you've also got your Russian bad guy. That one as well, by the way.
There must be in cahoots.
It was not. Yeah, Rambo 3 was just absolute nonsense. Like, it was just action scene after action scene, but it didn't make any sense.
Completely incoherent.
What's the title of the Rambo one I'm thinking of? Like 2008 or something?
Rambo.
That's just Rambo.
That was called Rambo.
It's just Rambo.
Was the first Rambo called Rambo?
No, First Blood.
First Blood.
Okay.
And then the second one was called...
I thought the reboot was First
Rambo
Blood.
Rambo First Blood Part 2. It had a really long title. And then Rambo 3, Rambo, and this is Rambo Last Blood.
Now, we should preface this by saying you've gone back through the archives.
I have watched them all because I'm working on a feature for entertainment.ie.
Great website.
About... Nice. About the growth of Rambo as a character, which you'd be surprised, there is growth.
Yeah.
So I've gone back and watched them all and there is growth. Probably the least amount of growth in 3. but yeah, there's an interesting kind of story arc going on there. And obviously, you know, with Last Blood, you have this kind of final chapter. So we open on Rambo has returned to America. So at the end of the last Rambo, he was in Burma kind of doing his thing. But at the end of it, he goes back to the States. So this one kicks off with he's been living in America for several years now. He lives on a ranch.
Of course.
He rides a horse. He has a family now.
Brian's nodding and smiling.
Nice. Horse.
Although like it's kind
horse
of
content.
It's Do kind we know of the a name weird. Of the horse? No, it's called City Gold.
Yeah. I really regret telling about that, but go on anyway.
And the ranch even has like a whatchamacallit, a not swinging chair. What do you
a
call
wooden
it?
Fence.
The wooden chair that swings. What do you call
porch.
It? Rocking chair. Jeez, the
okay.
word
a rocking
was
chair,
not coming.
Yeah.
The rocking chair on the front porch.
Is he cleaning
and
a
everything.
Gun on the rocking chair?
No.
Okay.
Cleaning a knife.
I'm sure he does at some point.
Does he shoot any guns in this film?
He shoots guns. He throws knives. Like I said, he rips out body parts. There's a lot of blood. There's a lot of stabbings.
All right. So what? Okay. So what?
So story wise, he's now. He has a family, but
peace.
He's not actually... Exactly, he's found peace at last.
Like
but it's
Hawkeye.
A weird kind of situation because he's living with them, but he doesn't seem to be married anyone. So he's living with this kind of Latina aunt and her niece because her mother has passed away and her dad has fecked off to Mexico.
Okay.
So... but Rambo has obviously been with this family for so long that he's become like a father figure to this girl. But action kicks off with the girl basically wants to reconnect with her actual father. So she goes to Mexico and while she's there, she is abducted.
Okay.
So Rambo has to go after her.
It's all set south of the border.
Yeah, well, most of it. Yeah. It ends up kind of coming back to the ranch at the end and you've got a bit of a kind of Home Alone type
Skyfall kind of thing.
Skyfall type thing. But no, it works. You know what I'm going to say this in my review. I do think that it's kind of a shame that for his last kind of hurrah, they didn't put Rambo in the setting where he thrives, which is a jungle or a forest. That's let's cool. be honest.
Yeah, that's because, a really good point.
Exactly, because that's why Rambo, the fourth Rambo, works so well, is because he's in the jungle. Yeah. And, you know, he's got his limited
resources
and everything.
Playing off that original aesthetic kind of predator and stuff.
But he doesn't kind of have that advantage here. I suppose the whole idea is he's between an environment where he's which he's completely unfamiliar with, which is Mexico, and then his kind of home territory as well. And he kind of alters between the two as his kind of fight zones.
Okay.
But thematically, it makes sense that this is kind of his final chapter in regards to it's all about home for him and how he will protect his family and his home until the very end. So it's a nice kind of recapitulation of everything that's been going on. And in the end credits, you actually get, there's this like nice little montage which goes from First Blood to this film. You know, you have a lot of nice shots and, you know, it is nice. But in terms of like an action movie, it's fairly standard. Like if you were to go in and watch this and you've no interest in Rambo and you haven't seen any of the films, like it's going to play out like your kind of typical action movie.
Yeah.
Except maybe a lot more violent than something you're used to. But that is what people go to the Rambo movies for.
For the insane amount of violence. And yeah. is it something for people who are familiar with the series to go to, or is it very much? Whatever?
No, I think they'll like it. I think they'll think that it's a fair kind of, you know, capping off of the whole thing. It's not exquisite. Like I said, it's somewhere between the third
Logan.
And the fourth film. It's not quite Logan, no.
Does it take a lot of those themes as well? Or?
A bit, yeah. Like it was more emotional than I expected. Like, I don't want to give it away, but there's something that happens not even at the end, but kind of starting off the third act that I was like, oh. So...
I am going to write D supports men. And again, Brian hates women.
Yes.
But I am a fan of the Rambo series. I like them a lot. I actually prefer it much more to, and I know people are diehard Rocky fans, but you know what? I watched the first Rocky and that whole thing with him and Adrian put me off.
Yeah,
I couldn't
you
watch
said
anymore.
This before, yeah.
Because it's really,
creepy.
Wait,
I'm not
really
familiar
creepy.
With this. It's that it's actually, what, he stalks her? I can't remember
he
this.
He kind of stalks her and then he's just kind of really forceful with her. And then the whole idea is like, she is like insecure. But then when he forces her womanhood out of her, like he's very forceful, like physically even, you know, then she kind of blossoms into herself
thanks
Robbie for like, you know,
it's mad how much people probably didn't notice that at the time.
That's the thing. I mean, it's only now, but I so as a result of that, I couldn't go back and watch. So I haven't seen like Balboa or 2 or 3. I've seen 4 because I watched 4 before Creed 2.
Has Van seen any of the Russian based?
Yeah, like the Rocky War
was watched,
the one
we watched
Drago,
4, so yeah.
Brilliant.
We watched it. Well, it's funny, you know, because we were watching it and thinking that your man, oh my gosh, what's
Dolph
his name?
Dolph Lundgren.
No, not Dolph Lundgren. The, you know, his friend, what's his name? Oh, his Creed.
Apollo Creed.
Carl Weathers. I couldn't remember the actor's name. Carl Weathers. He was being a bit of a dick and he was like, if you watch.
Taunting him,
If you rewatch that conference scene, he's like totally taunting Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah. And basically, for being Russian.
Yeah. And basically being like, I'm going to whip your ass. And then his representative, Dolph Lundgren, basically says politely, well, actually, we believe he's going to beat you. And then Carl Weathers is all like, what the fuck did you just say to me?
Yeah.
And it's like, so when you watch it, you're
it's
like,
McGregor,
it's
McGregor,
Khabib
all over again.
Yeah,
he's
it's
such
not
a nice
his,
guy.
Exactly. It's not his fault at all. But I mean, you know, then,
but to be
then
fair,
he died.
Yeah.
So.
Then he kills him in the ring, D. Like, he literally, like, Drago literally
yeah,
kills him.
Yeah, but he
in
didn't do it on purpose.
We don't know that though. Like, I mean, it's like the whole point of a Drago.
Like, it's not Million Dollar Baby.
No,
that's
no, yeah, that is. But like, I mean,
she was an evil lady.
No, but
she
like in the whole thing with Drago is that he's like that actually strong that he doesn't even know his own power. So like when he beats the shit out of Creed,
that's
like,
so ridiculous as well. Having the whole like they would not be in the same weight division
not
at
in
all.
The
like,
slightest. And not only that as well. The rules. The bit just to make the point. Actually, I actually did because I'm such a fucking nerd. I actually did the maths on it once about how they actually...
The velocity of his...
Correct, yeah. The whole thing was like, Ivan is able to fight at 500 pounds per square inch. That would actually destroy a man's... Like, that would literally... The actual foot-pound pressure of that, I actually worked out the physics of it once. That would actually break a man's face in half. He would die. Like, you would literally... That would literally kill you, like... That would actually kill you if you were hit that hard.
Yeah, but it did.
It did, but my point is that... No, sorry, yeah. Point was that at the end of Rocky IV, like, how many fucking hits has Rocky taken? Like,
oh, yeah.
He would literally be dead at the end of it. Like, there is no way anyone would walk away from that.
Fully headless.
Yeah, he would literally be a slopping... mess of viscera would be Rocky's face at the
any,
end.
Any decapitations in Rambo?
I cannot say. Oh, but
I love
there
that.
Is. I mean, it's Rambo. Of course there is.
Here's a question, right? Here's
any way you can describe someone being brutally murdered, yeah, that happens.
Yeah, here's a question, though. Stallone directed this, didn't he?
No.
Oh, who directed it?
I saw his name, Adrian Grunberg.
Oh, yeah, he's the guy that did...
Brian's clicking.
And actually, I know the... Well, I don't personally know the DP, but my ex-boyfriend's dad is the DP on it.
So what?
No way. Yeah.
What the
fuck? He did, like, Escape Plan and Veronica Guerin, and just a whole list of, like, random credits. There you go.
What?
What?
Yeah.
We need to delve back into this when you've had more time to repair.
Exactly.
Yeah, I am for going this to talk to you about this afterwards is what I'm going to do.
I'm pretty sure I have told you this.
No, you haven't. This is the first time I've ever heard
I've
this. And you're going bright
this is
red,
your city gold.
No, because I have told you this
you've
before.
You've definitely not. I would remember this. I would absolutely remember this. Holy shit.
Veronica Guerin looks great.
Yeah,
no, you'll never find my city gold. I'm trying to figure out what it might be. Yeah.
But it's interesting the whole like, because you do hear this about actors liking to work with not just the same directors, but DOPs. And then
DOPs,
obviously
yeah.
Stallone was in Escape Plan on this. So there you go.
Yeah, and that guy Adrian Grunberg, that's it. I remember he did Get the Gringo, that Mel Gibson film.
Ah, okay.
And he did,
there you go.
He's kind of known for working with those kind of elder actors, like
elder.
Imagine that. How can you be a elder director of photography while?
No, this is the director.
Oh, sorry,
this
I thought
guy,
he was DOP.
No, this guy Adrian Grunberg. He did Get the Gringo, and he's kind of known for working with like kind of elderly, not elderly.
That's a weird niche.
Yeah, you know what I mean. Like the Mel Gibson.
Like they're not like you know Michael Gambon.
I know, no, I'm not saying that.
He goes,
you know
picks
what I mean?
Them out of an elderly home or whatever.
Come on, we gotta go do another.
That's
action
the
show.
Expendables.
Yeah,
which had that Drago guy in it as well.
Yeah, Dolph Lundgren.
I love going full circle on these things for no reason.
No, that was good. That was good full circle. Okay.
All right. Well, we're going to do one last thing. Oh, yeah. So D supports men. And we're going to do
women.
A last little shout out again for Extraordinary.
So you got to see it.
I finally got to see it, yeah.
What did you make of it?
I loved it. And I got to see it in the IFI screen.
How
one.
About them new seats?
New seats.
Aren't
yeah,
they great?
Really cozy.
I didn't realize they recline.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
Do you know what?
That
I was
nice.
Suspicious.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
I didn't even drink any cans in it. I was suspicious.
We were talking about this last time, yeah, the cans.
Did I have any food? Nah, that's my business.
You don't need to know that.
But, yeah, I
Extraordinary,
loved it.
Yeah.
Oh, like, everything
it's
you
lovely,
said,
yeah.
I think I might have... So, like, yeah, I have the same conundrum as you where I don't want to make out that it's this flawless thing, but it's really just so enjoyable the whole time. And I think I enjoyed it more than Young Offenders or something,
yeah,
which thereby default makes it the best Irish comedy I've ever seen.
I wanted to ask you, because like, you were somebody who's actually written comedy in the past. Like, I mean, you're in a comedy sketch group for ages. Like, what was it about Young Offenders that you did not like? And what was it about this? What was it that this had that you liked over?
Do you know what? Actually, that's a really good question, because I think I preferred Young Offenders in terms of substance.
Sure.
Like I said, with it being a road trip movie and just having a lovely like structure to it.
Yeah.
Whereas this one's a little bit more all over the place. Sometimes I think maybe the characterization can be a bit funny. Like sometimes she's really afraid of ghosts. Other times she's flashing back to dealing with them as a kid and stuff like that. But I just, the fun of this one, it's anyone who's familiar with Maeve Higgins and that kind of
Dead
go
man.
Away. Like, yeah, just, like that's it. I've just summed up the movie and
well,
I
well, you know,
loved
they wrote
it.
The role, they wrote it with her in mind for
yeah.
the role.
Yeah.
And
even,
you can you couldn't see anyone else playing Rose.
Yeah. Listening, by, like even your interview, if no one's checked it out, it's in last week's episode. That really comes across her. Like, she's so endearing. And you can tell that she's kind of chuffed to be doing it or something as well. I don't know. Just all of it. And it's exactly what I had hoped for in that it's been getting rave reviews and early screenings in the US. Yeah. And it will live on Netflix or Amazon Prime really nicely.
And I think that's good because, like, I mean, obviously we as Irish people will be like, oh my God, this is fucking hilarious.
And this one's quite neat. Like, you, some of the dialogue and stuff, you'd be like, God, is anyone going to get that?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. You're kind of like, but then again, like Father Ted, like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, Father Ted, we look at it and it's very like, oh God, that's so Irish. Like yeah, just like, you know, the sheep in the back of the trailer are being driven around. Like, and you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's, we look at it, it's like, oh God, that's so, you know what I mean?
No, absolutely.
But it's funny as funny.
And
like,
it is in that same vein as well, I think. It's like the absurd, Barry, the absurd, it's Barry Ward, isn't it? His character's name is Martin.
Come on.
And it's, I don't know, yeah, just the whole thing. I thought Will Forte was a lot of fun. And actually, do you know what, Barry Ward as well?
He's really funny.
Yeah, I thought he'd be like, it's a real buddy comedy. Mm-hmm. It's very much the two of them. I thought it was mostly just Maeve, and he does a couple of different characters.
Yeah,
he
does.
He's inhabited by a ghost a few times. It's not too spoilery to say, and he pulls it off really well.
Yeah,
he's a really underrated actor. He's really great. Like Maeve, he was fantastic, and
So there you go. Yeah, no, and I just, want to give it a push for fucking Irish audiences.
Absolutely.
So. Go see it.
Yeah.
Ireland. I'm going to see if I can do that in every episode.
I mean, I feel like I could actually make a little drop whenever you mention it. Like, you can just cut straight to the national anthem. Like,
Ireland. Ireland. And there you have it. We've had a lovely Kurt little film show this week.
Kurt?
I don't know. Is that
Kurt Russell?
He's in that home you were talking about.
I want to visit that home. I mean, no, I don't mean it like that. Like, it's just like, it'd be like, hey, that'd be...
You're such a creep, Brian.
I mean, as in, like, it would be really cool to hang out with Kurt Russell and, like, Sylvester Stallone and all that kind of thing. I interviewed Goldie Hawn. She's a lovely lady.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What was that for?
That was for, oh, God.
Snatched.
Yes. And the high heels that she was wearing were so big. I was like, oh my God, that woman is going to fall and break her hip.
She's been wearing them all her life.
I know.
She'll be grand.
I know, but I just, when I saw her walking in, she was really like kind of unsteady. I was like, oh God, what if Goldie Hawn falls and breaks her hip in front of me? Like,
I'm tapping this, Brian.
Tapping the hating women. Yeah, yeah, there you go. Yeah,
yeah, let us wear our shoes. We can wear whatever we want.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Brian.
I'm sorry that I hate women.
No, it's unreasonable. But, yeah, there you have it. Do we know, put yous on the spot, what's out next week?
Oh, feck. Joker? Is Joker out next week?
I feel like it might be the Goldfinch.
Oh, God, yeah, I saw that. Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, I got
to
tell you.
Look forward to that review.
No.
Yeah. I know, but I got to tell you. I'll tell you about it after this.
And I think Ready or I think Ready or Not as well, which is like this kind of horror, but it looks really cool.
Mm.
I think they're the releases.
But I think we're going to be padding out next week with a lot of shy talks. No, so tune in for that.
Hang on. I know. Is Joker not out next week? Because
No,
October
that's
5th.
October 5th. That's the following week. And that's Judy week as well, which I can't wait to talk about.
Oh, yeah, Judy, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, look, I'm going to wrap it up. Have a lovely day, listener, and we'll catch you next week.